Hey everyone, welcome to Guilds of the North, your source for Guild Ball news and information from the Great White North. I'm your host, Paul Filio, here with my co-hosts, the one and only Antoine Bergeron.
Hello.
Ooh, sexy tonight. And my other partner in crime, B. Steve.
Hello.
Not so sexy.
I know, I was doing it on purpose not to upstage Antoine.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's good of you. That's good of you. How's everyone doing tonight?
Very good.
Yep, good.
We've kind of had an extended period of Guild Ball radio silence. It's been kind of quiet on the Guild Ball front. Not a lot to talk about. And so we haven't really been talking about much. We're still avidly playing the game, or at least Steve is. Steve plays enough for, like, the three of us.
Well, you say that, but we still had, what, six people last Wednesday at the gaming night? So that's not too bad.
Oh, yeah. So no, Guild Ball's still alive and kicking in our meta.
Well,
despite your best efforts, Steve. You've crushed all our souls, but we continue to play.
And yet, I keep losing to you in tournaments.
Well, yeah, it's because I pull out the big guns in the tournaments.
Exactly. Playing casual, acting, and going YOLO in our games, and then, boom, crush me.
Exactly. Then I drop the hammer on you.
Exactly.
I'm a sneaky git. That's the way I am.
And I'm supposed to be the whack player in our group, right?
Well.
You're the whack. Paul is the dream crusher.
You're whack and I am wickedy whack. we had kind of a quiet period in Guild Ball. It was the holidays, so we kind of took it easy, I guess you could say. But now we're back, and we've had a few things recently that actually came up that we thought would be interesting to talk about. As opposed to us rambling about life at the middle tables. So where do we want to start this? Do you want to start with the, maybe the new OPD discussion?
Yeah, sure. So last week there was a new, organized play document, out for a tournament, and there was one change, and it was the clock. So the clock had a new way to play the game. Basically, it's when you go into, the overtime period, if you want, after the 45 minutes of regular gaming, instead of having 1 minute activation and that you give a point to your opponent after each of those activation, when the minute is done, now you have an extra 5 minutes to use as your own, at your own leisure and speed. And you give 1 point after each activation when you're in that 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that part didn't change.
Yeah. Well, it's 1 point per activation.
Well, the one point given.
Yeah, but you can take 2 minutes for your activation now instead of one previously.
Yeah, no, for sure.
So it's a bit less stressful, but it's still under pressure, but less pressure than before.
Well, but it's not that it's
yes and no.
Yes, it is. But it also means that you can now take those longer activations. So, like, for example, I play Union at the moment. And my big problem was I ran out of clock, and I'd have Rage sitting there, four influence on him, and I would try to figure out how the heck can I activate him without running myself, like, out of that 1 minute, right? Because captains tend to have so much to do that it's impossible to do it in a minute with a full load of influence.
Yeah, exactly. Now you
that's what led to rushed and sloppy play.
And now you have the time to do your six influence activation with your captain and try to score the game.
And try to win, yeah.
Yeah. But mind you, like, if you take 4 minutes out of those five, then probably you're going to end up losing if you were behind, because after when the extra 5 minute is done, when you clock out, it's like War Machine, it's dead clock. So you automatically lose, even if you're up in points.
So unless you can close out the game, right, and that 4 minute on activation.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
One of the things I like is that it didn't change it, with that, it doesn't change the timing rules of the rest of the game, like counterattacks and stuff like that still work on your clock. You don't stop the clock and there's a like the clock problem from switching.
Yeah, pausing.
You're still on your time during your maintenance phase and your influence allocation. So the game stays the same. You just give points in that extra 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it's true because it was weird that you had a different set of rules, right? In some ways, the guy without the clock was actually an advantage. Just because there was things that suddenly were not on clock anymore.
Yeah, like counterattack.
And also, what I did, I know, once in a while when I was doing like a mascot activation during that clock out time, that activation took 2 seconds, and then I let the clock run out its full minute just to think what I was going to do in the next activation or two.
Yeah. And that makes sense, right?
Yeah. Now you just send the clock back right away.
You're
just hurting
yourself if you do that.
And
well, you still give the point, time. But... Exactly. You give a point, but maybe you'll catch up on time afterwards.
Yeah. So I like the change.
Yeah, me too. We've played since last Wednesday with that change. I played 3 games so far and went to overtime only with against you, Paul, last week in the secret bunker that the game went over clock. And we were both in the extra 5 minutes.
Yep.
And I managed to pull a win with 30 seconds left. Was it like something like that?
35 to 36. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had 1 second less than me on the clock when you won. And we laughed about it, yeah. I found actually that game was really good because it was you were super cagey.
Yeah. We'll talk about it later.
Exactly. I don't want to necessarily go into it, but I thought it was an excellent game.
And also, I think they clarified and put in the text that you pause the clock as well during the end phase, because I think it was not clearly mentioned that you pause the clock for end phase, like removing all the doing the
condition damage
and cleaning up and everything.
What wasn't, doesn't that, I mean, that clock's always been paused there, wasn't it?
For the, but the cleaning was in the maintenance phase, but the, I think it wasn't clearly noted that in the end phase you pause the clock for the condition.
Because before they were during your maintenance phase and not at the end of the turn. Yeah. So the timing wasn't exactly the same. So it was clear before.
Yeah.
That's true. I just always assumed. Like, probably a lot of other people did, too.
Yeah. But if you go raw, it wasn't like that.
Just the way you like it, eh, Steve? Sorry. sorry.
So, the other piece of Guild Ball news we have this week for you is the playtesting events that they were running exclusively at the Forge, their headquarters. Is now expanding around the world. So they're testing the new rookies, and there's going to be a one playtest event in the United States where we played the team tournament.
That seems really weird to me.
And there was one in Australia, and where's the other one as well? There's another one in Europe, I think, outside the UK. So there's 4.
Isn't it Germany or something?
Yeah, something like that. So there's 4 events running at the same day.
Steve, how do you feel about that event being run at turn 4 or whatever it's called?
I think it's being run there because they have playtesters in that area. So, and everybody's going to sign an NDA and blah, blah, blah. And like,
I'm not concerned about the legality of the NDA and all that. Like that doesn't bother me at all.
But the place, you mean the place and everything? The location?
No. the quality of the playtest. Because it's pretty much open to anyone, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the sample size is relatively small. Like, they're not...
Well, tickets... Well, the one in UK is bigger, and the other one outside, they're limiting it to 16 players or something like that, 12 or 16. It's smaller group outside the UK.
Yeah. But it's not a cherry-picked group either, right? It's just...
No, it's... Yeah, exactly.
So, what do you...
But it,
and I'm not trying to diss anyone, right? Like,
no, but
we went to the team tournament.
It's not going to be like all our hardcore player and stuff like that.
I mean, aside from the people who came in first at the team tournament,
there were some casual gamers there.
Yeah, and I think there's nothing wrong with being a casual gamer, but a casual gamer is not necessarily who you want doing your playtest, right?
They won't necessarily find the flaws and the.
I mean, GW tested rules with casual gamers for years, and we know what happened there. Just so happened those casual gamers were their staff. and someone at Red Ripple Games needs to have an anatomy lesson. I'm just saying. Sorry, I know this is Guilds, and I'm painting something else for another game. And my guy has muscles in weird places. Yeah. So I just, I'm being bad. I'm hobbying while I record. But I just worry that the quality information I'm going to get back from the US, team is not going to be on par with what they'll get elsewhere. And I think, in the US, there's definitely a different way to play the game.
Yeah. Well, every region has its own way to play. I mean, in the US, they tend to mostly kill the ball and play more.
You're talking Chicago style, yeah, right?
Exactly. But lots of people in the US adopted that style as well.
Well, because it works.
Yeah. So,
in my opinion, it makes for kind of a boring game of Guild Ball. But I'm a filthy casual. What do I know?
But I think that's why they want to expand, to get comments.
Different metas.
Yeah, different meta, different comments from, different gaming groups and stuff like that. So it's not going to be all, the guys in the UK, the regulars, who are near their gaming center. And probably if it goes well and, there's no leak or anything at all, they're going to switch region from time to time. Depending where their playtester are.
Now, didn't they do playtesting out of the US before? Didn't they strictly the worst guys playtest?
I think they did in season 2 for
there was a problem there or something, wasn't there?
Season 3 for the farmers. But and I know Jared McGraw was part of the playtest group as well because he.
We discussed
that exactly at Nova. That's what he was telling. That's why he left the podcast because you're not. They didn't want any people from the media to be playtesters as well.
Oh, he was on
Anatomical Precision, if I recall correctly.
I had no idea. Yeah. I got into the Guild Ball podcasting. Listening to Guild Ball podcast late. I got in the whole Guild Ball thing late. I didn't get on the hype train at first. I was mistaken.
So, who knows? Maybe there's going to be some event in Canada one day. Or they're going to do one in the Midwest or elsewhere. So, trying to get feedback from different community at different stage of development. Because
that's a good way to put it, actually, at different stages of development.
Because probably this is really early draft because they only got the final information in November, which player is going to play for which team. So they've been doing the development for those for 3 months or so. So that's not that much.
And the other thing is that it's important to remember.
And it's, 12 players? So...
Yeah. It's also important to remember that they're just testing a single player, not a whole revision of the rules.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, if, like, US are going to be having, like, 4 players or 3 players to test in the US, 3 to test, or they're going to send everything to everywhere. I don't know.
Well, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Yeah, they might have just a smaller sample size.
Like taking the entire 12 players and spreading them out into smaller groups. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting idea. I don't know. I don't know if that'd be wise to do it that way. Then you might get some weird kind of bias in your playtest, right?
Yeah.
And also, when they've done that in the past, like mentioning that they wanted specific guild, it was mentioned in their announcements.
Yeah, for when they were playtesting Season 4.
Yeah. So they have not mentioned that.
Oh.
And they are pretty small sample size for team. Well, for a number of players. So I would be surprised if they didn't have the full list. Like, let's say 5 Butchers player show up, 3 Hunters, yeah, and something else, and you don't even have less half of the factions there, and you end up with none of those in your playtest group, maybe, or in your playtest focus.
Yeah, could happen, because lots of people are playing Butchers these days. And also, it's only a main guild, so like people won't bring Navigators or Rats or...
Yeah, you're a miner, don't...
Or Falconers. Oh, wait.
Union?
Well, Union, they said in the blog post that they're going to have veteran greed on the turtle as well.
Oh, yay.
Yay, the model you love.
You know what I'd like them to do? Fix freaking Averson greed. That's what I'd like them to do.
No, they won't. They'll release veteran greed instead.
You know, I don't understand how, and we're going to go on my little rant here.
Oh, there it is.
How?
What? Well, we should do a segment, like you should have a theme song or a jingle, like Paul's Rants of the Week.
No, but I don't understand how you freaking release Season 4, and you go through all the models, and you look at that one, you go, oh yeah, that's going to get played. Like, there is no way that model ever gets taken in Union.
I know.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. And where else would he get taken? Is there anyone else that really goes, oh yeah, I need a slow, mediocre beater that, you know, that'll give my opponents points easy? I just don't know.
I honestly, I have no clue why they weren't touch.
Well, no, they were touch. They got rid of Greed's... the thing where if Greed was in within 1 inch, it gave Avarice...
A knockdown?
It added a knockdown to all his plays, and I think it gave him something else, too. It may have added 1 damage as well. But whatever it did, it's not there anymore. So I don't quite understand. I'm not a game developer. I'm just a player, and I'm a mediocre one at that, so maybe there's something I'm missing. Like, maybe there's some secret sauce with him that, and I'm not seeing it because I'm not good enough.
You didn't unlock him.
Yeah, I admit that's totally possible. But I get the impression that I'm not alone.
But you are alone playing Fangtooth, though.
What? No.
I think so.
What?
Well, you're almost alone playing Union, so fair enough.
Yeah. But I think people play Fangtooth in Union. Mm. If people play Union, I think they play Fangtooth. Maybe not every game, and I don't play him every game.
Oh, I know.
But I think he's certainly viable now.
Yeah, he's better. Much better.
I don't see really a downside to taking him anymore like I used to. Like, he used to be so bad.
Yeah. Now he's not just a paperweight.
That is entirely true.
Unlike Avarson Greed.
Yeah. And it's a shame, too. I got that nice limited edition model.
Yeah, I know. Right? The limited edition model is really nice and flavor and characterful.
Yeah. And I spent the time to paint it thinking, it's okay. Season 4 will save us all.
Well, it did for most part, except
for most models.
For most model, except those. Who knows?
Even Snakeskin gets played now, right?
There's still hope, Paul. There's going to be a...
It'll be an errata.
An errata, so probably like sometime after Adepticon, my guess.
Yeah.
So, we'll see. I need to play Hunters until then.
Yeah.
And I don't have a nice segue for the main part of the show.
Oh, our show had a main part? Hold on.
Well, it was the our hands-on experience with navigators.
Oh.
So unless you want to pause and put the SpongeBob SquarePants song or something like that.
No. There'll be no SpongeBob SquarePants.
You want me to sing it or... I'm going to be banned from the show if I start singing.
Yep, pretty much. All right, so let's talk about some navs.
Finally got them?
Yeah. finally got them locally. Better late than never.
I must admit, the quality is good on them. Much better than the blacksmith.
Yeah.
And a bit better than the... Falconers as well.
Yeah, I'll give you that too. I have to take another look at the farmers because I think the farmers are probably very close. It was funny because I don't understand how you go from the farmers being the first team and being quite good to everything we kind of got after that in plastic.
Well, I think rats are nice as well. I didn't prime them, so they're still...
Rats are hard to tell because it's black models.
Yeah, exactly. So I
haven't seen... A nicely painted set.
So I'm going to need to, like, just prime them to compare because it's starting to tick me. Like, are they nice or not? But it's going to be hard to scrape mold lines. So I guess I'll have to prime them and scrape a couple of mold lines before doing the Zenithal or just spraying a bit more primer on them. We'll see.
Are they... Are there some heavy mold lines? I don't know. I haven't really seen.
But all the plastic so far, I have some mold lines somewhere.
Yeah, well, I know. I've been painting blacksmiths, right?
Exactly.
So, I discovered the best way to deal with the mold lines, just pretend they're not there.
That's your way of doing it. I am having trouble trying to do that.
Ouch, Antoine. That hurts, buddy.
You just said it.
Yeah, but the that's your way of doing things. Woo, that was...
I just said it was your way of dealing with it because you just said it. I've been looking at my navigators and the miniatures are really nice. Really. But most of us got the alternate horizon in resin with the set and it is a lot more crisp.
Yeah, I have Fat Thumb as well, so I can compare, and it's day and night.
It's day and night. It's super good plastic, but it's still plastic.
So I'm getting your non-limited edition Horizon, is what you're saying?
Nope, you're getting the limited edition one, because I think the other one will stand out too much if I keep the good one.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, the good one will fit nice with your metal... fish.
Yeah, that's what I think too. So I'm giving you the alternate one.
Well, then I'm very fortunate. And I thank you much. I will bribe you somehow. I'll reward your generosity.
Well, bring in some canned chowder from Iggy's.
Oh.
That's not a bad idea.
I could go with that.
That's not a bad idea at all. See, Steve? I know I kept you around for a reason.
Yeah.
Steve's the brains of the operation.
Well, the brain. It's a big word. And so...
What were we talking about? Oh, yeah.
Nav, we talked about... Yeah. Well, I was trying to do like a bit of hobby because I know like... for geeks, it's mostly hobby. So I was trying to, and not all gaming and all winning.
Are you meaning that we don't talk and we just hobby and
no,
time on the main show?
No. But you talk more about hobby than like tactics and gaming and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why.
I like the miniatures. I find them a bit hard to remove from the base. So
yeah, well, some of the smaller, I didn't try to fiddle with mine yet, but some of them with the smaller legs and feet, they're harder and you have to be careful not to break them.
Yeah, I might end up just cutting them instead of trying to just remove them. Some of them are small, like you were saying, and when I was trying to force them, the plastic was just bending, so I'm afraid it will keep the bend or break. So
what I did for some of my blacksmith is, well, usually I was taking a cutter to remove the peg, and then I was drilling to try to force under the feet. So like that way it was removing the peg a bit more, what was left after the cutting from the part that was standing out of the base. So after the drilling, you just use an X-Acto knife under the feet, and most of the time the glue will let go and it's going to be fine. But some are harder than others.
Yeah, I've had some challenges thus far. I managed to get all my blacksmiths off. I've got 6 of them off right now, so halfway there.
Well, some of them were 7 with
quite the effort.
Vetsinder.
I wasn't counting her. That's true. So I guess I have 5 left.
You have a freebie.
This is true. But they're hard to paint. Like, and I'm trying to be positive about the plastics. Like, I don't want to sound like I'm a hater, because I'm not. I have some problems with them, but it's not. It's more with the price you pay now for the quality you get. Because I think the price went up and the quality went down, and that irritates me. And in fact, it's not consistent. Like, I can still buy farmers for less than I can buy, let's say, falconers. Obviously, we're talking for one box versus one box, not the whole farmers team. And I think let's say farmers versus nabs, right? At wholesale, a box of farmers is like 2/3 the price of the nav box. And you get more terrain, you get more bits and bobs in there. So I think it's a better value. And I think the miniature quality is very similar in those cases. So I find the pricing model odd.
It might be a minor versus major guild thing too. They maybe don't think they'll sell as many of the miners.
Yeah, probably they did the smaller production run, and that's why costs are higher.
Well, I just wonder if in general they're doing smaller production runs every time now.
Right? Possible too.
Because there has been, maybe not in all areas, maybe not overall, but there seems to have been a bit of a
slowdown.
Yeah, slowdown in Guild Ball play, in terms of new players coming on. And
yeah. Right.
But and then I don't remember if we talked about that last time, but I don't think we recorded since, but that doesn't work with the new targets for the Nationals, though.
Well, I don't think we had the targets for the Nationals last time we recorded.
Yeah, so I don't want to rehash the discussion they had on Guild Ball tonight, but
why not? No, maybe our listeners don't listen to that show.
No, but the new target is for Nationals last year. If we were able to have 30 players or more pre-registered and paid,
it was 32.
No, it was 30.
I thought it was 32. Okay.
No, 30. 32 okay. was the target we put on ourselves.
Oh, okay.
It was 30. If we add that, the flight, hotel, and entry to SteamCon UK was paid for the winner for each national. And this year, they upped that requirement, if you want the full package, by 66%. So instead of needing 30 players, we need 50 players for the East Canadian. And that's for East Canadian. Some of the nationals that had more player in last year, they went up by about the same percentage too. So even like France, they needed to hit 80 or something like that. So that's for a product where it's hard to get most of the team, with most of the old metal teams no longer available anymore, and with delays on most of the plastics too, I find it hard to justify the 66 growth ask to get the same benefit than we did last year.
Yeah, well, I think it's just a... I think as a marketing expense, the first few years, it made sense to pay for everything. I think maybe now it just doesn't make sense for Steamforge to do it anymore. Right? They're just...
Well, it's costing them a lot of money. I mean, it's 16 player.
Well, of course. That's exactly what I mean, Steve. And I'm not knocking them for it. I think it's silly just to not be a bit more transparent about it. You know, and say, hey, listen, you know, the first few years we did it this way. Unfortunately, that's just not possible anymore. And then you could even share some numbers, right? Share what it cost you, what you paid to fly people. Because I'm sure it was a bloody fortune.
Yeah, of course.
Right? And the more information you share, the more sympathetic your fan base is going to be. I think, anyway.
You're talking about Gubs here. Please, don't give them too much credit.
Well, even at that, Steve, I think most adult gamers understand that there's a cost involved.
You think?
Yeah. I think.
He said most, all.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, come on. I'm not... I'm no fool either, right? I know there's people who are unreasonable.
I pity the fool. There's always
people. Well, exactly.
I couldn't resist, sorry.
Well, random Mr. T is always required. But I really think you'd have to be an idiot not to understand that, hey, you know, if you're flying 50 people in or whatever, 30 people in, well, if it's... I mean, the ones in Europe are cheaper. Yeah. Like from over here, it's big bucks to fly to England.
Yeah.
So I get it.
I get it too. I just find the growth percentage was maybe too big.
Yeah, I think they should have had some more transparency. And it's been like, listen, you know, we can't afford it, guys. This is what we're going to have to do. We'll still offer it, but we have to raise the clip levels.
And not just say that the game is growing and they want to show it.
Yeah, that was a cop-out. In my opinion.
Like, our numbers last year, we had 31 players show up out of the 32 registered. If I remember correctly, 6 of those were local. Like,
yeah.
We would need, and this, that's another subject, another topic, but there will be a competing event near the national this year, so we might probably lose some of our locals from last year. So that means a growth of more than 66% from outsiders.
Which is doubtful.
I don't see us reaching it. I'm not even sure we'll reach the target we had last year. And which this year only give the entry ticket to SteamCon. So hopefully we do, but
it's not. Yeah. We'll try to be positive, but
we'll see how it goes when we open registration as well.
Yeah, we'll know at that time.
Do you have any idea when registration is going to be opening?
In two or 3 weeks. So in early February.
And the event is in June, right?
June, yeah. First weekend of June. So that leaves ample time to do the promotion.
And people to plan.
And for people to plan and get passport for people in the US that want to attend if they don't have it already and stuff like
that. It's important to also point out, just in case there's anyone in the US listening who might consider coming, that cost to travel here is really cheap because our currency is worth 30% less. So $1 US is like $1.30 Canadian. And the cost of everything here is about the same. So it's good value for the money for US travelers. And Montreal is a fun city with lots of stuff to see and do. So hopefully people are enticed to come.
Hopefully. I'm sure we'll have repeats from people who came last year and from far. The guys from Nova Scotia have already mentioned that they want to come back. And there will be more of them. So
that's Matt Knott, right?
Yeah.
The first to the finish on every news item ever posted on Gubs.
Yeah.
He is a posting machine, that man.
He is.
All right. So, Nabs.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Steve, why don't we start with you? So you started playing him, you got your set a little bit before Antoine, I think, a couple days?
Yeah.
And I don't think Antoine necessarily had time to play them before you did.
No, the only game I had before were during the... when we had them as pre-information because of the media program.
Yeah, and you tried it against me. We had the Fish Nav silly game.
Yeah, I had a couple of game with them. But since we got the models here, my first game was just last Friday. So Steve had a couple of games before that too.
Well, I took them to the... I just got them before the Taco Bowl on January 12th. Mm-hmm. So it was trial by fire.
Yeah.
So I played...
And the first round...
I lost badly to you.
You got stuck with your arch nemesis.
Yeah, my Kryptonite. And
it's so funny because you are such a better player than me.
But in retrospect, I think my mistake in that game was not taking Azimuth.
You were trying to play the ball, and I think I have an easier time against the ball-playing team.
Yeah, exactly. So that was my mistake. I tried Siren, and I should have stuck with Azimuth and replaced Horizon for Siren. It would have been much better.
But you were playing them... You were trying to play them as a 3-0 team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so in that regard, your lineup made a lot of sense. In terms of the matchup against Union and what I was playing, I had a good list to face your list.
Yeah, it was my gaming was not optimal at all. So,
that happens, right? Yeah. There's no.
But what I've discovered from playing them, I know they're trying to advertise them as a 3-0 team. They're more of a 2-2. Or, like, extreme cases, like last week when I couldn't get the... I was trying to score, but I couldn't. So I ended up doing only takeouts, and it worked pretty well. I mean...
Only takeouts?
Yeah, against Paul, I did only takeouts. No goal. He scored a goal with Fangtooth. He had two takeouts, one on Horizon and one on Fathom. And after that, I had only takeouts. I had four takeouts, plus a mascot takeout. Because I had 9 points, and the last two were on my last activation. I killed, I don't remember which player, and the turtle for the last kill.
The turtle?
Yeah, I did a mascot kill. It was down on three.
Except I wasn't playing the turtle. So if you killed the turtle.
The snake then. I killed the mascot.
Yeah, so if you killed the turtle, though, you killed them out of my miniature bag. So I don't think that really counts.
So I killed the snake with a last attack from Azimuth. But the thing is, it's almost easier to generate momentum doing damage because, like against you, I was able to, if you're able to set up a Ice Spy, with Windfinder plus a free charge with Azimuth or Ebb, and then you get one crowding out from Windfinder or any other player, then you're starting to wrap, and that's when you generate a lot of momentum. Because I was up at like, what, 10 momentum at one point?
Yeah.
And it was all by doing damage. I mean, Windfinder, because you played
well, even ball playing team have trouble generating momentum.
Yeah.
Because of that, so.
But they have, because Ebb, Azimuth, and Windfinder, they all have momentous damage. So that helps them a lot. And, in the end, like, Azimuth was able to, like, when he charged, if there's a Ice Spy on the knock target, he did charge and then he gets the rerolls, and like most of the time it's a 4-1 that's down to 3-1. He gets two wraps, so most of the time he'll do a momentous 3 plus 1 damage, or if you're really lucky, you'll get a momentous 3 plus the momentous 2, or if he's not knocked down, you'll get a knockdown as well. So it's pretty crazy the amount. Azimuth is not as much, but like when I was doing the most damage was against a knockdown Fangtooth with Windfinder, and with one or two assists, I don't remember, probably two. And she was double wrapping to momentous two damage. So each of her attack was doing 4 damage. And I loaded up with 6 influence that activation, and I took out Fangtooth with her.
Yeah, it was brutal.
So every influence is getting you 2 momentum points and 4 damage. Pretty crazy. So that's,
you know, it went really, really well for her.
And Ebb as well has the potential to do a lot of damage, I find, because
people underestimate Ebb, I think. I think he's underappreciated.
Because the thing is, again, well, all of this, you,
and he's also, sorry, say one last thing.
No, but go ahead.
I was going to say the other thing is that people, you know, that maximum of 2 damage to him makes a huge difference because he's so easy to heal.
Yeah, he's annoying. Because,
go ahead, you were saying?
No, I was saying that all that damage set up, you always need at least 1 crowding out and the Ice Spy knockdown for sure for the setup. And even sometime I was able to do like a charge with Ebb or an attack with Ebb, and he was then doing the Sprung a Leak for -1 armor. So now you're 3-1 models, knocked down 3-1 models were 3-0, so even easier to wrap. So he was doing...
Well, they were knocked down, so they were 2-0s.
Yeah.
Poor Fangtooth.
Well, that's on Fangtooth, but other players are 4-1 on your team, most of them, so it was down to 3-0. So, yeah, it was pretty rough.
Yeah, I think my lineup was not right either. I went through a weird drug state, a drug hallucination, and did not take Hemlock. So no smelling salts sucks. for clearing all those knockdowns that you had all over the place. Because I was all piled up in a scrum. It would have been very, very handy.
Yes, but I mainly what you want to do with them is try to score a goal early with probably Phantom, or if you have him in your lineup, Horizon, because he can dodge a lot. So, but most of the time it's going to be, let's not kid ourselves, it's going to be Phantom who's going to score, because she's so good.
She really is.
I mean, she has a, the thing is, she has lots of dodges, so she's hard to pin down, because as soon as you're in cover, Like, she's def 5, so she's hard to hit and cover with her def 5. But, and after that, if you have momentum, you can just dodge 4 inches off and plus acrobatic for another 2 inches. And then she runs 8. So she can get out of danger if she needs.
Yeah, that's kind of BS. Just saying. I'm not saying it's unfair. I'm just saying it's bullshit.
And I also played against Mason. And again, Ebb was really useful with the Sprung a Leak.
You play against Masons?
Yeah, against...
At the tournament?
No, against Antoine. Not at the tournament, but against Antoine in the game. At the game.
Little
night.
Antoine.
Yeah. Yeah, little Antoine.
So I was curious. I was surprised to see, like, because most of them are 3-2, so dropping them to 3-1 helped a lot to try to get
do some
yeah. resolve. But you have to be really careful because as soon as they're getting close, they just take out players so easily. So the navs are pretty squishy. Except for Ebb, but like Horizon is a 3-1 with 8 hit point. So I think like you attack him once and you did 4 damage on him, something like that. With Fang 2.
Yeah, but he's also got a mascot reward, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah, but still, I mean, he's easy to take out. Like if you don't have any other option, you can just go for the VP and you still generate momentum out of him. So
that's true.
3-1 still- with 8.8 health. I mean, it doesn't take much to take him out.
That's true. And a VP is a VP, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And when he's done, killing the mascot is worth doing then or killing him again.
Yeah.
Like most of the time, killing a mascot once is almost bullshit because you need multiples of 2s to win the game anyway. So if it doesn't go to time, that was just a waste.
Yeah. Unless you had nothing else you could do with that resource, right? Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And that's always tough because there's always something else you could do with those resources.
Or like if you have... But the thing is, if you're able to put some condition damage on him, he's going to die pretty quickly. So you're not... Like if you can do AoEs and stuff like that do damage, either burning... Yeah. So he's gonna die slowly and pretty fast.
Slowly and pretty fast, eh, Steve?
Yeah. Slowly and pretty fast. he's gonna have a slow death, slow and painful death to condition. I mean, just a bleed will take out 3 damage, so he's down to 5. So almost half the work is done.
Yeah, I was playing Alchemist, so. I know exactly what you mean. I was playing against Alchemist in my emulator game, so a lot of my players were Chris on fire or
poison
most of the time. So, yeah, Horizon didn't die to condition, but he went down to 1 point because of condition and then was easily killed by I don't remember what. So.
Well, anything? Same thing with Ebb. He only received 2 damage from activation, but condition damage are at the end phase and it's not an action. So if you're able to stack up those condition, that he will take lots of damage.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good point. I hadn't considered that.
And that's why Fathom has smelling salt.
All right. That's also kind of BS.
The captain, I really like Windfinder. She's really either like, against her, in our game, I was playing her as the main damage dealer, but most of the time I was playing her with 4 influence, trying to do a range ice buy plus the full steam ahead. So it's for another player.
Just I like how versatile she is.
Yeah, she can
She's
do a bit of
everything. She's not stuck at doing only one thing. She can adapt between turns. And
yeah, she's like if Shark and Corsair had a love child.
Yeah, she can support. She can go for the kill. She can do a quick damage tap and score.
Yeah, she can do a gold run for sure, because with her legendary, she can disengage easily, and she has, if she charged, she has that lovely tackle double dodge on her last column. So.
Mm-hmm. And in my game, she did that. She did a 6-point activation. She finished Venon, which was engaged by Ebb, who already damaged him the previous turn. And after doing that kill, just scored. So that's great.
Living the dream.
Yeah, I think a lot of people complain that they think the rerolls are OP, or that they think the navs are OP in general. I don't think they're OP. I think they're going to be a solid middle-tier team.
Yeah. The rerolls, though, what I've noticed is, well, part of it is also because I don't know the cards that well yet, but rerolls take a lot of time on your clock, because every time, every attack you make, you reroll those dice and everything. So it takes up a lot of your time on clock. So I found out, I found that my games were, closer to clocking out almost all the time.
I think that's probably just because you don't know the
models yet, right? Like, you have to pick up the dice, re-roll them, separate and everything, so it takes a bit more time every action you make.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's certainly true.
But the first goal is relatively easy to make. But after that, like, your opponent is going to see you coming from a mile. So he's going to try to hide and protect the ball and not letting you have the ball. So that's
they're
why
not that good at retrieving balls, sadly.
That's true.
Well,
they have options.
Yeah, you have options, but if you don't have siren, your best option is a range knockdown to try to get the ball
scatter
off.
The ball and pick it up.
Scatter the ball and hope for.
I mean, they've got better ball retrieval than, say, the Falconers do.
Don't the Falconers have, like,
not the
range knuckles and range
the Order. No, sorry, the Order. I meant to say the Order.
But
I don't know why Falconers came out.
Well, Falconers, I mean, Matagi is attack 5 with for his attack at range, so as it's the same problem as Navigator. I mean, as soon as you have somebody in cover, you're losing dice and successes, so you won't get it. And or you have Divana who can do it if you're in the area, and so it's their one trick. But they're not that good at retrieving the ball as well.
Yeah, no, I totally meant to say Order. I don't know why I said Falconers. Probably because we've been ragging on them all night. Oh, well, not really ragging on them, but we pointed out some flaws in them, shall we say.
But and the navs have really hard time with against model in cover with like if you're
well the same reason is your dice pool is small, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're so they won't be able to generate that precious momentum, but also not all models have the tackle on one, so like Fathom or tackle is on 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think
that makes a difference.
I think Ebb and Windfinder are the ones with a tackle on 1. And the other ones are with a tackle on 2. Or yeah, Angel as well. Angel as well as a tackle on 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she has to have something, right?
Yeah. I still haven't tried her yet.
Is her tackle on 1 momentous? I think so, eh?
I think she now has a...
It's 1 dodge momentous.
Yeah, exactly. Momentous
tackle. So they added the dodge. So she can get out, because... I was thinking she had the tackle.
But she's 1-inch melee. She's
1-inch melee.
Exactly. I need to try her out to see how we like do the gimmicky
linked activation.
Yeah, linked activation. Because linked activation is pretty good, because most of the time if you can pull out the goal, I mean, I've done it with the hunters, so I'm pretty sure it's gonna be working even better with those 2 to score. You can pull a goal from pretty far away with those 2. So, like doing the pass to Siren, and then she dodge out if she's engaged and something like that. And not Siren, but Angel. And then you linked activate and she goes out and score.
That sounds like a winning plan.
Yeah. I don't think the scoring with Phantom. Scoring with Phantom. Then say before the throw-in saying it's going to be a linked activation, and then they don't have, they have to be careful where they throw the ball back in and stuff like that. I don't believe in it.
You don't believe in the dream?
No, I don't believe in the dream.
Yeah. That's my dreams. It is pretty dreamy.
Yeah. My dreams have been crushed and broken.
It's the drawback of theory crafting, right?
Exactly. Magical unicorn land.
Exactly.
But they're fun. I mean, I didn't really have a real scoring game, scoring team. I have the rats. We're supposed to be a scoring team, but I always end up doing a 2-2 with them, going for 2-2. And it's fun to have the navigators with all those dodges everywhere that I'm not used to. So
different is good.
Yeah, they're pretty fun. Don't know if
variety is the spice of life.
Yeah, don't know if I'm gonna play them in tournaments or anything, but definitely for now.
I bet you, if suddenly the internet decides they're super good, you will play them in tournaments. I know you, Steve.
I don't think so.
Oh, you lie!
I have fun with them. I mean, I've played 6 games with them in the last 2 weeks, so I like them a lot. I would need to paint them, even though the OPD say I can play with them unpainted.
I swear I'd only mock you every second time we played.
I know. You would be near behind me and every activation. What, you're picking up an unpainted model, Steve? Is that model unpainted, Steve? You're playing in a tournament with an unpainted model, Steve? Or maybe...
I wouldn't probably... Okay, I might do something.
Or maybe something more subtle. But nah.
Hold on, that wasn't subtle? That is Paul subtle.
Exactly.
Where's my hammer? Yes, do we have anything else to add? I mean,
I'm scared to play against blacksmith with them.
Well, it's going to be wild to play against my blacksmiths because I'm awfully discouraged.
Brewers seem scary against them.
Oh, brewers will be a nightmare for them, I think.
Because all the resilience and tough fight, so you can't go with the you can't go with the damage route because you cannot do high damage that just don't care about the tough fight.
Yeah, and the resilience makes them harder to get the ball from because most of the time you want the charge to your tackle double dodge. But then it means you need to remove the resilience before doing your charge. It's not always possible.
Yeah,
after that, they can move that player. So
resilience, you have a couple of ways to deal with it. Like Windfinder can up to sacrifice or I Spy for the cause and to proc it. Especially like if you put the ball on a resilience model, you don't have any choices. And also in that matchup, I would definitely take Siren because she can use Lure as well to proc resilience from distance. So she could be useful. So
that's true. I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, you use Lure just to proc the resilience, and then if she has what's his name full steam ahead. She can still charge for free. She has one influence left, and so she could charge the resilience player and then do the after you proc it, of course, and then try to do a lure and something like that. So, and get the ball back, make a pass to the empty space or something like that, just to take the ball, because that's kind of the only way you can get the ball back.
Seems like it all worked out.
Well, no, but I've been thinking all, and also because I've played against G with my rat catchers when he got his navs, because he got them before Christmas because he ordered them directly through Steamforge. So he had them before Christmas, and I played with rat catcher, and I had the ball on Vetgraves in cover. So it was really hard for him to get the ball back. I mean, he's 3-2 with armor, with close control. And he has...
Yeah, that's a nightmare.
And he has great counterattack. So, yeah. It was a pain for him. And like at that point, and he didn't have Siren, but Siren would be like a good option against that kind of setup. Try to get the ball and move 4 inches from him and just try to hard play lure, pay the 3 influence and try to get it off. I mean, it's 3 defense, so it's pretty easy to take the ball back. But against Blacksmith, it's going to be harder because they have Burnish that negates plays. So it's going to be another.
Well, only if he's on the field.
Yeah, if he's on the field or 1 inch. But I mean, if you're going to take in your 12 and if you're playing against Nav, it's worth taking him because you can negate those. So you can protect the ball. And he has Sentinel as well, so.
Burnish has Sentinel as well?
I think so. Does he?
No, I thought there was only 3 Sentinel captains.
Oh, okay.
I might be wrong.
Oh, it's possible. I haven't played them in Season 4, so. I don't remember. But I'm checking.
I'm fighting the urge to go look.
Oh, I'm looking. That's why I'm trying to fill the...
I'm trying to fill the air.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't have
okay.
Sentinel.
On my side.
Sorry. I was saying, I think that's Anvil, Furnace, and.
Ferris.
Ferris. Yeah. All right, Antoine, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm happy with them. I have not played a lot. My only gripes is they might need to do more melee than I wanted. Like, I already have teams that can do that. And they have less shenanigans, like ball shenanigans. Something like the Order, which can do out of activation ball retrievals and pass and stuff like that. I would have liked for them to have maybe a bit of that. They're purely just kick and score or kick and pass.
Yeah, they're more... straightforward.
Yeah, they're a lot more straightforward.
Passing and scoring style.
Yeah, so... but that didn't bother me too much. It's mostly that they're more melee-oriented than I wanted from them. But I don't see how else they'll generate the momentum you need and compensate for the other player killing the ball and you having a hard time retrieving it, so.
Yeah, they're not going to have a choice, right? They're going to have to
play
at least that somewhat. Play like that somewhat, I should say.
I find them, like, for what I've played, I know the playstyle is not the same at all, but strangely similar to how I played my Masons.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Like, the few games of Masons I played with more... ball scoring models, pretty light. You
kind of like a 2-2, right?
Yeah, 2-2. So it's really similar in the end. They're faster, but they're squishier. But in the end, you need the bunch ups to be able to kill people. The captain is a great support or can do both herself. You have a bunch of squishy, flexible, fast models on the side, like Flint and Harmony, or Phantom and Horizon. So,
I think I'll have to force, quote unquote, myself to do a 3-0 game at some point.
You're a pure damage. I wonder why you have not gone for Butchers.
Yeah. Well, because you played them, but but honestly, I was trying to most of the game except that last game against Paul, I was able to do at least 1 or 2 goals.
Like, it's a scoring team, and you said at least one. Like, no, I tried to do at least two with my butchers.
Well, let me check just for fun my games, except that horrible game that I lost 12-2 to Paul, the first game. The other game was against Engineers, and I did 2-2, so it's not too bad. Against Hunter, I did 3-0, so yeah. 3 goals, no takeout. Stupid bear. Against Mortician, I did... Oh, wait. 1 goal, 3 takeouts, and 2 points of clock. And against Masons, I did 3 goals. And against Paul, I went full melee. So that's not too bad. I mean, I've scored some goals.
You want a little variety. It's okay.
Yeah. So I just need to recoup from that last fiasco and go back to the scoring.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it was a fiasco.
No, I know. I'm just kidding. But in the sense of how the guild is meant to be played.
You know, I don't think Perkins is going to show up at your door and be like, Steve, we need to talk.
Well, if he does that, he has lots of time and money to waste.
And we know he doesn't because they're not paying for people's flights anymore.
Exactly.
So there you go.
So, yeah.
And that's why you have me on this show.
Exactly. So I'm pretty safe on that. So I'm going to still do takeouts with them. No, but honestly, that's the easiest way to generate the momentum so far.
Yeah, it seems lost to charge just to pick up a dodge.
Yeah.
Or to build all that setup to just go dodging around 2 or 3 times. Because you need to get to your third column at least, except with Windfighter. So at that point,
it's not worth it.
You might as well do some damage there or use your character plays.
Yeah, well, most of them, they have their character play, even Azimuth and Ebb, their guild ball is non-momentous on the second column.
Yeah.
So they're really the reverse Mason's playbook. You need to charge, or like we said earlier, get the setup with a couple of assists and then the I Spy from Windfinder to be able to do some momentum without charging.
Yeah. And at that point, you're in melee. You might as well
punch them. Exactly. Yeah.
You don't do all that just to charge once, pick one result, and then
bounce
continue.
Out.
Yeah.
Well, because they're knocked down, they don't have the ball, so might as well pounce them.
Yeah. That's it. I don't have a lot of games played compared to Steve, so I'll see how it goes in the next few games, if it changes my view on them. But still, it's a nice change from Butchers.
From just running up and smacking people in the face?
Well,
not that you ever did that, really.
Yeah. I try to at least do 1 or 2 goals per game with Butchers, so...
When a humiliating victory just isn't humiliating enough, I'm going to outscore you with my butchers while I'm killing you.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't mind me.
It's a ball game. That's why I play.
Yeah, sure.
That's why I play. Anyway.
Yeah. It's a ball game where the best strategy is not to play the ball. You got to wonder about that, right?
That I don't mind if it's the best or not. That's all I want to
play. Yeah. I agree.
I don't think I ever went into a butcher's game trying to say I'm going to get 6 takeouts. The few times it happened, the result was that it was by accident because I wasn't able to get the ball. So
I don't think I've ever scored just 6 takeouts. I think I always have a goal in there somewhere. It's too time consuming and hard to get 6 takeouts.
So I think we've covered NAVs so far.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much run out of anything to talk about for those. So is that it, Mr. Steve?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, then, guys, it's been lovely talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
We already have material for another episode. We can't discuss it here right now, but there is more Guilds of the North on the way. But until then...
And we're going to have a recording of our adventures in Warwick, Rhode Island as well.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
In a couple of weeks.
Gonna do some I was going to call it TempleCon.
It's Captain Con now. So, TempleCon is dead. Yes. We went to the last TempleCon. We killed it.
That may be true. Yeah. Though the website now goes to a new con.
For TempleCon?
They just remove everything from the gaming side, except the
RPG?
No, not the RPGs. The consoles, the old...
The arcades?
Refactored arcades, yeah.
The retro stuff?
So it's really just retro and steampunk stuff.
Back to its roots.
Yep.
Out with the filthy gamers.
Well.
They're gamers too, so I think it's just to focus and keep it at a manageable level.
Yeah, that was the thing. I think it was just too big for them at the end. Anyway. I'll talk to you guys all soon.
Yeah. Take care, Paul.
Bye.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, at PRFilio, Antoine at Eltonio Berg, Steve at B_Steve. And if you really feel the need, I guess you can follow Yom. He's at Yomasta. Breaks and outro music by La Drave. You can listen to them at ladrave.bandcamp.com. See you next time, geeks.
Thank you for checking out United Geeks Network Family Member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to unitedgeeksnetwork.com, where you will find the Gaming Careers Podcast, the resource for people looking to find their fit in the gaming industry. You will hear game industry professionals talk about how they succeed in today's competitive environment and how you can do the same. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at unitedgeeksnetwork.com.